This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
I owe you nothing!
It's just money.
This is madness! Everybody just yells and screams at each other. Nobody's civil anymore!
That's not the kind of humor we do on this show.
Put that coffee down.
I drink your milkshake.
Now you're looking for the secret.
There can be only one.
Everything becomes chaos.
Can you dig it?
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness. I believe this is now episode 5 of season 1. My name is John Kutzmita, and I'm joined as always with Brent Johnson. Brent, how's your week going?
So far, so good. I flew home from Vancouver on Tuesday, got stuck in an ice storm in Dallas, stayed in the Dallas airport for about 12 hours, finally got a flight out to Miami at midnight, arrived in Miami at 2 a.m., sat there till 6, and then finally got on a flight home to Puerto Rico. So
that's what you get for going to Canada. Automobiles.
Yeah, you know, right. I took off in Vancouver. They said we were going to Dallas. I fell asleep, wake up, open my window. They tell me we're in Dallas, but it looks like Duluth, Minnesota outside. I mean, I don't know what the hell is going on.
That's wild. Yeah, well, you know, 12 hours in Dallas airport is about as exciting as Dallas gets in general. So it's almost like you visited the city. Well, that's a good start to the show. A little bit of madness. Anything interesting from the event in Vancouver? What was the specific theme of the event? Gold, right?
Oh, it's the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. So it's all about, you know, minerals and mining. And that was very interesting. You know, there was a lot of people there. So there's a lot of interest in the space right now. You can see that interest is back up. And, you know, there's a lot of people thinking commodity gold market on the horizon. So, you know, we'll see. Obviously, there's a lot of people that are interested in gold. Gold has, you know, had a pretty good year so far. It had a pretty hard pull back today, but we'll see how it goes from here.
Do you use some of these conferences ever as like as an indicator? You know, it's funny, in the crypto world you can almost for sure identify the bull markets when all these conferences start blowing up, but do you look at that and say, okay, maybe?
I do, and you can tell. I mean, you could definitely tell that you know, the gold miners had been on a 6-month run or 5-month run, whatever it was. And everybody was all bulled up. And, you know, I showed some charts, and it showed, you know, the last couple of years for GDX and GDXJ have done pretty well. The last 6 months have done pretty well. But here's an interesting stat, and people can go find this if they want. But since GDXJ was launched 13 years ago, it's down. It's negative since inception. Now, GDX has been around a little bit longer. It's been around about 16 years, negative since inception. So, and then there's this Philadelphia and gold and silver index that, you know, mining companies. It's been around since the mid 80s. It is just barely positive since inception. And its only reason it's positive is because of this 6-month run we've had, or this you know, rally we've had over the last 5 to 6 months. So the point I was making is you can buy and hold gold for the long term, but I don't think you can buy and hold gold miners for the long term. If you want to do a trade in gold miners, I think that's the way to go. But just buying and holding gold miners has been a recipe for disaster for going on 40 years now.
Well, you even said that last week. You had put it kind of succinctly where you want to be renting the miners, not owning them.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good. You know, as soon as you mentioned something like that, a statistic where something that is an ETF or a paper representation of a market, the gold community immediately pushes back and claims that there's manipulation. What is your take on just kind of that ongoing excuse or argument or perspective?
Well, you know, I think all markets are manipulated to a certain extent. We certainly don't have free markets. And so, you know, to the extent all markets are manipulated, gold's not immune from that. The idea that gold is absolutely manipulated every single day, and every single day it's up, it's a free market, and every single day it's down, it's because of manipulation, I do not buy that at all. And if it is so easy to predict, then why don't you just short the market on the days they're going to manipulate it down, right? If it's so easy for them to do it, just take advantage of it. So, you know, I'm a huge believer in gold, and I think everybody should own it. I think it's going to go a lot higher, but, you know, I'm not religious about it.
Careful, you're gonna create more enemies, Brent. So, yeah, gold pulled back a little bit, and, you know, part of that was yesterday's announcement. The FOMC, Fed, Jay Powell, they raised overnight lending rates another 0.25%. We're now in that 450-475% range. Very aggressive rate hiking cycle. All of this has happened in less than 12 months. The first hike wasn't really towards, I believe, what, the end of February last year. So it's amazing what they were never going to be able to do, and they have done. Now it becomes this question of soft landing, and it seems the market very, very quickly, in just a couple hikes in a couple months, have gone from, you know, they're going to blow things up and the world's going to crash, to, oh, for sure, soft landing, pivot, QE. And things are just almost getting out of control, it feels like, to the point where those who are taking a more of a supportive role of what the Fed is trying to do against inflation feel like this is going to anger the Fed, right? Like anger the gods, and they're going to continue to hike and eventually, you know, take the steam out of all these risk rallies.
Well, you know, the kind of the I mean, this has been a couple maddening days, to be honest. I mean, because when the announcement came out yesterday, well, first of all, everything you've just said is absolutely right. You know, the market is kind of priced in this perfect pivot and soft landing, and they're going to be, you know, cutting by the end of the year. But, you know, if you just read the statement yesterday and you didn't listen to Powell, you just said, holy cow, that's hawkish, and markets would have been down, I think, today. But then, you know, he gets out there and his tone and the things he said were basically the opposite, or at least they came across as the opposite from the statement. And it's just really weird. And I have several times over the last year, I have said Powell is the most clear-spoken central banker that I've ever come across. There's no, you know, mystery in what he's saying, and he's basically done exactly what he said he would do. So from that, you know, it's good, but or it's not too hard to decipher. But I got to tell you, his body language and the way he said everything yesterday, that was just a little weird, because it was very un-Powell-like, and it was kind of the opposite of the statement. And so, you know, markets ripped after he started talking yesterday. And the longer he talked, the more they went up. And then this morning, they were up again. And so, I mean, at one point today, the NASDAQ was up 4.5% today. And I was like, and that really was madness. And, you know, this kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the year, John, is I said my base case was that, you know, it was kind of like everybody else's, that we would have kind of some kind of a, you know, a hard sell-off or a mini recession, however you want to describe that risk-off event, sometime late Q1 or into Q2. And I said the only thing that concerned me was that seemed to be everybody else's forecast as well. And I said, I'm always trying to figure out what could make it go the other way. And I knew what could make it go the other way. And what could make it go the other way has been playing out. So I'm trailing a little bit this year. I'm not, you know, I'm not up 15% like the NASDAQ in general. And, you know, you're trying to parse these words of the central bankers and the actions that they're making. And, you know, this is not an easy game, and it can be maddening at times. But I do have to say, you know, Powell's body language and what he said yesterday, that did kind of throw me for a loop a little bit. You know, now if tomorrow morning we have a huge beat on non-farm payrolls, then maybe that'll help explain it. Maybe he was trying to pump the markets before a big sell-off. But, you know, I'm still trying to figure out what his intention there was.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you have what has been going on now. Is it not that, you know, this is kind of more of a rhetorical, right? We're having a conversation here, but is this a short squeeze? Is this
yes.
Is this the or is this animal spirits?
Yes.
Or is it a combination of both of those? reacting to more Jay Powell's, because he, one of the interesting things, I think there's two things that stuck out to me when I skimmed through the press conference notes. One was he had made a comment relating to, like, they haven't quite yet declared victory, but it was almost giving the sense, or he said the word victory in some context, right?
Yeah.
The other thing, you know, he had made comments related to just the, I think their view on inflation overall. So it was interesting that they would choose those words without, you know, kind of expecting that these market reactions would be there. But I saw someone make a perspective before the press conference that they kind of already had the Goldilocks environment. Like, yes, things were coming down, inflation was coming down, but the markets weren't in any kind of panic. So the only thing the Fed really needed to do was kind of steer it down the middle. So did you think they tried to do that by doing hawkish minutes and the Fed being more dovish, or Jay Powell being more dovish in the press conference?
I mean, that's possible. Again, you know, they have kind of had the Goldilocks scenario so far. And what nobody thought he could do a year ago, nobody thought that he would be able to do what he's done. But he's done it, you know. And again, I don't think it will necessarily last. But, you know, for anybody who said he couldn't do it, they were wrong. He so far has been able to do it. Now, I think there's a lot of people, me included, who think that there will be consequences to this. But, you know, I give the guy credit. He said he was going to raise rates aggressively, and he raised rates aggressively. And he is in a spot now where if they do have to cut, he's got a lot of room to cut, right? Before he even has to go to QE or anything else. So, you know, I think anytime, you know, central bankers start getting hubristic, which is most of the time, you got to be very skeptical. And so I am very skeptical. I mean, the other thing is, you know, what happens if we do get a strong inflationary print in 2 weeks, right? You know, and maybe the rate cuts at the end of the year are not quite as you know, certain as seems to be priced in yet. So I still think that there's a lot of time left in this quarter, and there's a lot of time left in the year. So, you know, I would say for those who have participated strongly in this rally we've had in the first 4 to 5 weeks of the year should probably be looking for the exits, or at least have an eye on it.
Yeah. So if you have a strong non-farm payroll report, there's, you know, jobs added. Maybe the household survey says something a little different in terms of multiple job holders, etc. But employment's been the real, you know, it's, to take a step back, one of the things that's frustrating in terms of Fed monetary policy is so much of it is dictated by lagging indicators. Yeah. Employment's yeah. lagging, CPI is incredibly lagging, especially the housing component. So you have employment data. I mean, we can see the layoffs, especially in the tech space. So it's so interesting. Yeah. Are people buying the NASDAQ and tech because they've trimmed a lot of fat and now they're going to be more profitable? Or is this just kind of that FOMO thing that happens in momentum stocks like tech? But it feels like if we get strong employment, it's more of that, like, good news is bad news. Does the market kind of take a step back from this where, well, you know, the Fed's going to, yeah, the Fed's going to keep their boot on the market's neck for a while. This isn't like we're in a place where they even need to cut rates. They're just slowing the pace of hikes.
That's right. You know, and the part of the reason that the NASDAQ has been rallying so hard is there's kind of an embedded interest rate play in tech stocks. And so as interest rate expectations have been coming down, you know, tech stocks have been leading the way. And, you know, if those expectations were to start to rise again, tech stocks would likely be the ones that would get hurt the most as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how the data comes out. I mean, I think everybody is expecting data from here to kind of start to soften or to continue. It started softening already. So I think the market is pricing in continued softer data and Fed cutting by the end of the year. And, you know, listen, I'm not saying that can't happen, but, you know, nothing is certain.
So we started this conversation or pivoted into it about the Fed because we were talking about gold. Now, gold has pulled back a little bit. I wonder, do you see that as kind of an early indicator? Because the argument would be gold as the pet rock doesn't have yield. When you can get 450 basis points overnight, let alone, you know, in a 1 or 2 year bond, Why have add to your goal position, or if not, why wouldn't you trim it back? So now that you have people kind of reacting in risk on markets and riskier assets as if this is the beginning of a Fed pivot or some sort of new, you know, the end of the hiking cycle, gold is potentially telling you something different, because why would you sell off here if you actually think we're on the cusp of new QE?
Yeah, I mean, it was really kind of a weird day. The ECB came. So the Fed was yesterday, the ECB was today. Prior to the meeting, the euro was up, the dollar was down. The ECB came out and said they had a hawkish statement. They said they raised 50. They said we're going to continue to raise. But then when you listen to Lagarde, you know, she said, you know, data dependent. And, you know, it kind of took her words the opposite of what it took Powell's. And so it was just weird, because then the euro comes down, the dollar rallies, gold sells off hard, but equities rally like crazy. And, you know, bonds, I think yields were down a little bit, so bond prices were up a little bit. And so it's just kind of a very weird day. Listen, this could all be reversed in 24 hours. If we had this conversation tomorrow, which is Thursday night rather than, you know, Friday, or if we had it Friday instead of tonight, we could be having a dramatically different conversation. I mean, my takeaway is this is, you know, don't get too caught up in the day-to-day moves. Hopefully you have kind of a long-term plan. I mean, I just say, you know, this, nothing is certain. You know, what happens today could be reversed tomorrow. And, I certainly don't have a crystal ball, but rather than trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen, I always try to figure out what are all the different things that could happen and why would they happen, and then just kind of wait and see how they play out and react to them when they do.
Well, and speaking of bonds, I mean, another one of those indicators. So again, we're really kind of we're scratching our heads at this movement, or the move in risk assets. And we're looking at other things that tend to be more stable or better indicators. Number one, monetary policy, but the way gold responded to it. And when we're talking about bonds, yeah, there's more of a policy mistake outcome reaction yesterday from the bond market. But speaking of policy mistakes, the yield curve inversions are still a real thing, and they're not, you know, once they start to steepen, that's usually where the recession starts to kick in. But, you know, the bond market tends to be right at some point. And there still feels like, you know, the where capital is being allocated, it expects that things are going to get uglier, as you had kind of suggested they might.
Well, here's the other thing that's related to that, John, and I'll see if I can find a chart and I'll send it to you, I'll post it on Twitter or something, is, you know, whenever the yield curve inverts, it's almost always leads to a recession. And whenever it inverts, that's always what gets the headline. Recession guaranteed, recession incoming. But what nobody ever tells you is usually when the yield curve inverts, it usually takes anywhere from 6 to 18 months for the recession to happen. But not only that, usually during that time period that the curve is inverted, but we haven't hit the recession yet, equities rally. And that's exactly what we've seen this year. You know, since the summer, or at least since September, equities are up pretty dramatically, right? Despite the curve inversion, and despite that the curve is getting worse, or the curve inversion is getting worse. So, you know, it's, the curve inversion definitely indicates that we are going to have some kind of a recession or risk off event. And I absolutely believe that. But I am not shocked. Even though it wasn't my base case, I am not shocked to see what we're seeing.
Now, is this, in that regards, then, in your opinion, somewhat of, we talked about the various forces behind it, animal spirits, short squeeze, but is this, you know, a classic bear market bounce?
I believe it is. That is my base case, is that this is a bear market rally. When you get these, you typically don't get these big moves in equities in an equity bull market. You typically get these very short-term big moves in a bear market rally. And I still believe that we're in this bear market rally. Now, can I be wrong? Of course I can be wrong. And I will just have to adapt if that happens. But I think that this rally that we're having is getting a little bit long in the tooth. Would not shock me if it lasts another, you know, week, maybe into CPI. But my guess is that by the end of, by the second half of this month and into March, we're going to see some action, not just to the upside, but to the downside as well.
Now, the Fed was with
the rate hikes and everything else is you know, they have a dual mandate, full employment and price stability. They've had full employment arguably for a very long time, so they're somewhat willing to sacrifice that. So non-farm payroll tomorrow is going to be obviously an important data point, as it always is. But the other side of that dual mandate, the price stability, they clearly failed over the last 2 years. You have 40-year, year-over-year inflation. But again, being a rate of change metric, it's going to be really interesting how inflation looks year-to-year from those very, very high levels. Maybe an absolute and or rate of change, however you want to tackle this question, what do you think, you know, inflation does? What's the chances of inflation being sticky and the Fed lives that nightmare of a, you know, a double peak, a short dip and another spike in inflation? Or do you think inflation is going to continue to come down at the potentially expense of full employment?
In the very short term, I'm not sure. So, you know, the February print, the March print, I'm not sure. It wouldn't surprise me if it came in a little bit stronger than people are expecting. But by the time we get to April, May, June, July, when we start getting the big year-over-year prints, I expect inflation, at least in the year-over-year, to start, you know, to come down. And, you know, the year-over-years are possibly even negative, right? And so, you know, Powell, I don't know how many times yesterday he said disinflation, we're on the right track, disinflation. I think that's part of the reason. They know that these year-over-year numbers are coming up. What's going to get very interesting is at the end of the year, when we're no longer doing the peak year-over-year, you know, inflation changes, and if these structural factors, you know, people, so many people just left the employment market and are not coming back in, if that keeps labor markets tight, that's when I think it could get very interesting. And again, I try not to get into the whole inflation or deflation debate. What I try to do is do my best to understand what could cause both and be ready for either one of them.
So a wild couple days. Tomorrow is going to be another market moving data point. Just for the fun of it, this time next week, what do you think is going to be happening in assets and risk assets specifically?
Okay, so everybody says never give predictions, especially, you know, including both time and price, right? So, but the thing
especially
is,
in 7 days,
I don't really care if I'm wrong. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think we're going to have a decent to good jobs number tomorrow. I think things will sell off because I think they got a little frothy today. Because a lot of equity managers are behind the eight ball and they're lagging this year, that dip will probably get bought. Now, whether it gets bought tomorrow or Monday or Tuesday, I don't know. And then at some point next week, we'll rally again. Maybe we get back to these same levels, maybe a little bit higher. And then by the end of next week and into the following and end of the month, I think we're going to be lower. So there you go. That's the prediction. Time, price, all that kind of stuff. It's not investment
all the good
advice.
Stuff.
And if I'm wrong, you can tell me and I'm an idiot, but that's how I see it playing out.
Oh, hey, before we wrap up, put some context or color on why equity managers that are behind the ball of this rally would be coming in to buy a potential dip next week.
Well, so, you know, again, if you're a professional money manager and you're managing like a traditional hedge fund or a traditional mutual fund, and your job is to beat the index, and you came into the year very light or hedged or whatever it is, you know, bulled up on cash, and, you know, equity markets are now anywhere from 8 to 15% higher, and you're trailing, and some people are trailing significantly, they don't get to sit in that seat too long before they get yanked out of it and put somebody in there who will, you know, put risk on. And so it's a real thing. Like, career risk is a real thing. And that absolutely 100% affects markets. And to think it doesn't, I think, is naive. So, you know, the people that are trailing now are praying for a pullback. And it'll be interesting to see if they get that pullback. Do they use it to get long, or do they stick to their guns and wait for it to fall? And, you know, time will tell. But it is a real thing. Career risk in the markets is a real thing.
Well, there you have it. So what a week it has been. We did not talk about my Eagles. We'll do that next week because we have an extra week before the Super Bowl. So we'll save some of that hype for next week. Brent, I appreciate the, you know, your thoughts and perspective. It is a very interesting turn of events. You know, the Fed keeps hiking. YOLO investors can't get enough of risk assets. And it just feels like, the party is going to end because the punch bowl isn't even there. So everyone's kind of, everyone's running on a second win, but maybe not. Maybe Powell's going to bring the punch bowl. We'll find out, but I appreciate you hopping on here and sharing your thoughts, and it'll be a fun one to see if you were right and if you were wrong. It'll be equally as fun to see who called you out on it. But you can find Brent on Twitter.
I'm sure they will.
Oh, they won't hesitate. You can find Brent on Twitter at Santiago AU Fund. You can find me at John Cutsmita. This is Milkshakes Markets Madness. It's so maddening, I can't even get it out. But you can find us at Twitter at Milkshakes Pod. You can find us online at Milkshakes Pod, Milkshakes Pod everywhere. Send your feedback, send your hate mail, send your love mail, send whatever you want to send. Just make sure you're here next week. So thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. And Brent, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Stay safe. All right.